So welcome, everybody. I'm Larry from Larry's Home Designs. I've been doing this for 22 years, designing houses for individuals as well as home builders. I've done designs all across the United States. I can't name every state right now, but there's quite a few of them. And this, behind the seminar idea of 15 home design strategies, came from those 22 years of experience and listening to couples talk and listening to contractors say what they wish the homeowner would know before they start building. So that's why this all kind of came together, and I had the opportunity to talk about it today. So we'll get started. I do any plans, any style, anywhere, as I mentioned. So here, I'm jumping the gun. Their clock is slow. I've spoken with a couple people so far today that say they want to move out of state. I can still help you out. Like, you guys, you're moving to Colorado, so not a problem there. And how not to design your house, that's the biggest one I ran into. I've sat at, oh, there's a couple more people coming. I'll sit back and wait here in a couple minutes. The number one thing that I run into with couples trying to design their house is communication. The guy wants one thing, and he thinks if he gives up his thing to give the wife what she wants, she's going to have her dream house, and he won't get his dream factors built into it. But it's all about give and take, communication all the way through. I've actually had a meeting with a couple years ago that she sat across the table from me, he sat to my left, and she was telling him everything that he was supposed to tell me. She wouldn't talk straight to me for some stupid reason. And finally, he just got frustrated and said, "You sit closer, you point out on the floor plan what you want, and don't do this, this, and this." Well, she got ticked off, and he got ticked off, and he left. And it was at my place, and I was stuck with her for about an hour and a half entertaining her. It took her 20 minutes to tell me what she wanted, and by that time, he was long gone. He got in the car and left. I was like, "Oh, crap, here we go." But anyway, he came back for her eventually. And I guess they made up and built the house because they're still married. But yeah, I go through that a lot. I've been sitting in between shouting matches too, which is never any fun, but I survive. Here's the important one. Needs and wants. And they can probably be pretty close to identical. Of course, we all want a kitchen, bedrooms, and a garage. And the guy's thinking, "Man, I'm going to be spending a lot of money in the kitchen. I'd really rather spend it in the garage." But the wife wants something to entertain in, enough bedrooms to sleep guests. And the guy wants the workshop. The crossover compatibility here would be to find a kitchen designer that can cut your costs, get you what you want, and add 6 or 8 feet to the garage, which isn't overall not really that much more expensive. You know, a couple of trusses, a little bit of extra concrete, and it's easy to add 6 or 8 feet to the garage, and you got your workshop. I've seen that done. Or another thing that's really effective in garages, just from a designer standpoint, is put attic trusses on the garage. Steeper roof. You can have a room built in the trusses on top of the garage. And you can either use it for a workshop or as an extra bedroom. And that usually is a really cheap space to add on without increasing the outside footprint of your house. You can either have steps from the garage straight up or access from your house over into that space. So that kind of is a really inexpensive feature to do. I see things like this all the time, which is actually a great starting point. You know, graph paper sketches. One square is a foot. It gives you a great starting point, and it gives me, you know, pretty much everything I need to know about what the homeowner wants. But what happens is they don't take into consideration the wall thickness. I get people that say, hey, I want a 28-foot wide rancher with two 14-foot bedrooms. And I said, not happening. They say, well, why not? Is that because you lose over a foot of wall thickness? They said, we got to have 14-foot rooms. Well, then you got to go wider. You know, they just see that line on the sketch pad, and they don't realize that the interior walls are 4.5 inches. The exterior walls are 6.5 when they're finished, or wider, depending on what kind of construction you're using. And even in the case, if you have two bedrooms side by side with two closets back to back, you're looking at a foot just for the interior walls and a foot for two exteriors, so you lose 2 feet of floor space where you could be. They think they have that, but they don't. So they shrink. Oh man, my rooms are shrinking. Yeah, they are, but you need that or just expand the house another foot. It's, again, not a super expensive thing to do. So like I said before, graph paper sketches are great, but they are deceiving because they're single line when they should be double line. I had a question the other week about a lady saw a plan that she really liked. She said, can I fit this into it? It's a log style. Can I make it a contemporary? I said, yeah. I said, usually anything that fits your budget, you know, we can shift and shelf a little bit, whatever you want. But people seem that they have to build if they see a stock plan on the internet. I'm limited to that. I got to stick with that when in reality you're not. They think that the designer's ideas are what they have to work with. But I can take any home plan here in the building today and convert it into a totally different structure type and make it look completely different. So if you're into contemporary, that's fine. Or if you like the contemporary floor plan, you want it built with logs, probably for the most part it can be done, but might be a few structural changes here and there. They said most floor plans can fit most architectural styles. And the one thing that I encourage people to do is consider your surroundings. You don't want to build a log home in a city. I've seen that done. It's not right in the city, but on the edge. I've seen one sit out in the middle of the countryside with nothing around, just a log home. And they're best when they're backed up by trees or something to make it look more log, more rustic. And this was not. It was just out there. It was like, nah, not my style, but hey, they liked it, so I guess it was okay. Then there's the contemporary style. You can fit those in anywhere. But if you want a woodsy look, you know, take that into consideration. Some people like to clash with their surroundings. Some people like to blend. So it's, you know, keep in mind what you're building in before you really go into that and have something you don't like in the long run. When you're picking out your floor plan or designing it on graph paper, you got to evaluate your own lifestyle. Some people have never thought about that. Is, well, I don't know what I do. Yeah, you knew it. You just do it subconsciously. Me, I go for the coffee pot, so I know exactly where that is. But, you know, if you go out on the deck in the morning in the summertime, you want a deck outside your bedroom, you can do that. Or you go straight to the kitchen, you don't want anything that's too cramped. If you have a lot of kids running around the house and you're not a morning person, you know, design the area where you're living in so you don't clash. Your weekend routines are probably different. You're not rushing off to work. You got more time to relax. You want to sit at a bar in your kitchen, or you want to just grab your coffee cup and go back to bed after a while or whatever. But it's little things here and there that can make a huge difference when you're coming down to the end of your planning. Entertaining style. That's as many options as there are people. But again, a lot of people that entertain indoors, they're going to naturally have a bigger house. You want more space either in the kitchen, or you want a larger great room where you have a place to just crash and watch football or whatever you want to do. Or if you entertain a lot outdoors, you can shrink the house and have bigger decks, bigger patio space. I just finished one in Ohio, had a huge back porch, and they entertain outside. They had an outdoor fireplace, nice sitting area. I was jealous by the time I was done. Could have loved to live there. The other one is people like to dream big, and I do too. And I say, buy the land first before you build. Some people say, well, I got to pick out my floor plan, then I got to buy my land. No, that's exactly the wrong thing to do, because your floor plan can be dictated by your scenic views. If you have a nice view out the back, then you want a plan that has a great room with a lot of glass, maybe. Or if you happen to buy the property and your view's out the front, then you really want a building that you can have a lot of glass in the front versus a little foyer and not many windows like some houses are. Or on the ends, it all depends. So I can, buying your land is crucial before you waste a lot of time and energy. And they say, yeah, this floor plan is awesome, but then in the long run, it ends up not working for you at all. Garage and basement styles can be determined by the type of land that you buy. Say your land slopes away from the road, you can tuck a garage in your basement in the back, or vice versa. Some houses have it in the front. And usually it doesn't matter what slope the lot has, but you can put a garage on each end of your house, whatever your plan might be. But it's critical with the slope conditions. It might dictate, if you have a really nicely sloped lot, you can actually maybe shrink the overall size of your house and have a nice walkout basement that's finished. You know, kind of keep the cost down that way. And, you know, so it's all determined by the kind of property that you have. And here's one that can make or break your house. If you have a small lot, you necessarily, I mean, you can do what you want, but if you fill up a small lot with a house that touches every border, so to speak, you're looking at something that's going to kind of overpower your lot. It doesn't look like it belongs there because it's kind of popping out in the middle of nowhere. Versus if you have a smaller house and a small lot, you can kind of move it around where you want, position it better for your garage access or entertainment purposes. And if you have a large lot, of course, you can go for the large house. Move it back a little bit further from the road. Give your property more of a nice estate feel, a little bit of a grander appearance. Like I said, a smaller house can look good close to the road. Larger house looks better further back. And again, it all depends on, you know, if you're a development, or if you're building in a development, to have them set back a certain distance from the road, you necessarily don't want to go against that. Keep it kind of uniform, because you break the uniformity in some developments, they might not let you even do that. There are some restrictions that they have to abide by, but you know, it's all going to depend on the type of land that you have. Windows and doors are crucial. I was actually speaking with a couple this morning that they are building in an environment where, they're actually out in Utah, I believe, and they want the wintertime benefit of the sun, but not the summertime heat problems. So you got to look for a window manufacturer that knows what your general location requires as far as the number of heating days versus the number of cooling days. And like you guys in Colorado, you're going to have something different than what we have here, because you'll probably end up, I'm not sure if you're more southern Colorado, but if you are, you'll probably have more days that are a little bit cooler than what we have, so you want a better window for insulation. And some windows are actually coated with a tint that if the sun is at a certain angle up high in the sky in the summertime, it'll reflect more of the heat back out from the glass than it'll let go into the building. Which then in the wintertime, the sun is lower on the horizon, it'll actually let that heat go in, and then your house retains that. So don't skimp on the quality for your windows. It's part of your house. It needs to have a good insulation value. And you need to get a warranty and keep the paperwork. Because if your windows get to be 18 years old, you have a 20-year warranty. Some manufacturers sell you the windows and they think, it's going to last. They don't worry about it. And a relative of mine actually had Anderson windows. And I think he had a 20-year warranty, but he didn't keep the paperwork. So they said, hey, you don't have proof that you bought them from us, so we're not going to honor that. So if he would have honored it, he would have gotten free windows at 18 years, but that wasn't the case. And designing for resale value. Some people yell at me when I tell them this. They say, this is my retirement home. Yeah, but life changes. Life can happen in a heartbeat. And if you have something that has public appeal and yet still gives you what you need, I would say go for it, because a friend of mine years ago built his house and said, I want it this way and that way. I'm just going to live here forever. 2 years later, life hit him in the face and he had to move out of state and he hasn't been back. So the easy way to do that for resale value is add a basement. Some people say, that's kind of expensive. I'd rather have a crawl space. You're going to get the excavator out there anyway. You're going to might as well just have them dig down 4 more feet, put a basement in. All you're going to have is 4 more feet of concrete walls and a floor slab, and then you can always finish it out later. And the cost to do that in the overall process is very, very small. Separate master bedroom and bath. That is always crucial. If you ever look at real estate listings, you always see it. 3 bedrooms, great master bedroom, bath suite. They're kind of bragging about that. Which that's the boss man and the wife's private space, and if it's nicely done, it's even better. I would say a minimum 1 full bath per floor as a baseline, but if you want to do it right, do a half bath on the first floor as an extra for your guests. That way your full bath stays private. Nobody can just walk in there and say you're rushing around last minute, your bathroom's a mess, and your guests show up a little early. You got that half bath for them. You don't have to worry about the mess in your own space. There's 3 different basement wall options. Concrete block, they're still being used, but they're the least expensive, which is probably why they're still being used. But they're impractical for one reason. They're made out of, I believe, 2,500 or 3,500 pounds per square inch concrete, and that's porous. And they allow the moisture to come in. You have to seal them on the outside, and if that's not done right, then you got to end up sealing them on the inside. So you end up, my dad's a case in point with this one. The grade on his property is not quite right, and every time there's a downpour, he gets this little trickle in the basement. And after it's built, it's kind of hard to determine where exactly that comes from. But he sealed it on the inside, and he's doing that every couple of years. And it's just an extra cost, and he's sick and tired of it, but that's what it is. The next best one is poured concrete walls. That's where they set the forms up on your job site, bring the truck out, and pour it right on site. More expensive, but they're more practical. And you can actually order a concrete that is very, very dense, which makes it much less porous, which reduces the risk of leakage into your basement. My favorite, Superior Walls. And I am not a Superior Walls rep. I don't get paid to say this, but they are made in a factory according to your plan. They're made out of 6,500 PSI, which is impervious to water. It cannot get through. If it gets through into your basement, it means it's coming up through your concrete floor. It's not coming in through the walls. They actually have a warranty on it. I think it's 15 years. And they actually are prepped with studs on the inside and electrical conduit chases. You can finish them out pretty easily. And it's a very quick build. I think most Superior Walls are actually set up in about a day or half a day, depending on the size of your house. And this blows people's minds. Superior Walls does not have a concrete foundation. They put gravel down in a trench, and they compact it and set the walls on that. And that is how it's been done ever since the 1980s, with very good results, actually. I'm sure you've all seen timber frames around here today. And, of course, the big thing for that is structural insulated panels. And I would not only recommend them for timber frames, but also for a typical house, if you just want a frame-style house. It takes the place of the frame, and it's very dense. There's a couple different insulation qualities. One is the expanded polystyrene, which is a more looser, I wouldn't say looser, but an open cell foam that takes a lot more inches to get the R value that you want. Then there's the polyurethane foam, which gets about an R7 value per inch. And that is very dense, very efficient. We did a house in, might have told a couple people of this already, but did a house in Juniata County a while back that 2,400 square feet, he built it with the SIPs. And in 4 months' time, he was on vacation for 4 months. Comes back, he had the thermostat set at 50 degrees. He came back and he'd only used 25 gallons of propane in that 4 months' time period to keep it at 50 degrees. He had a lot of glass on the south side, so that helped a lot during the daytime. But still, it's a very efficient system. So if you're doing timber frame or any type of energy efficient house, this is a very key thing to look at. The reason they're so efficient is they have very little thermal bridging. Where every stud is, you'll see on these pictures in a moment. A picture on the left, every vertical line is a stud, and that's a heat loss point. A typical 2x6 stud has less than a 10 R value in its 5.5-inch width. With a typical panel, you have no studs, which means there's no insulation, there's no thermal bridge where the heat can escape. It's all stopped. So the only heat loss on the one on the right is around the windows, which makes it probably at least 30% more efficient. On both pictures there, the temp was 24 degrees on the outside, so you really are comparing apples to apples. It's not like we're doing a 50 degree and a 20 degree in either or. And here's the one that always surprises people. They think they have to find a builder before they can build a house. And what they really need is a designer. And I don't say that just because I am one, even though it does help. But some builders don't even have a designer. They'll sub out their work. They'll take it to somebody who's an architect or a designer like I am. And they'll just do it that way. Other builders have their in-house designer. They have their own system. They want to work what they find is most efficient for them. No matter what your floor plan may be, they want to try to get you into something that they already have pre-drawn to make the process go faster. In a sense, if you want to get what you really want, you need to find an independent designer who will really listen to what you want and then run with that. I actually had a couple stop by a while back that said, we're tired of this. I said, about what? They actually were going to buy all their product from a lumber company that said, if you buy all your materials here, we'll give you your house plan for free. which that could end up being several thousand dollars worth. But then they say we got sick of it because every time we made a change, they send the planes back and it had a garage attached. Our lot does not allow a garage. It's a narrow lot, so we have the driveway going back behind the house, the parking area, and that's all we want. So we tell the guy, no garage, nothing. Comes back, they still have a garage. He said, every house needs a garage. We just got tired of it. So you need to find a designer who's a good listener, somebody who will listen to what you want and acknowledges that you are the boss, because you are. If it's not your house, why build it? You know, make your own ideas happen. And I'll take your ideas and do my absolute best to make them work. If it's structurally impossible, I'll tell you, but then I'll figure out a way to make it happen from there if I can. And a good designer should not be forceful with his own design ideas, because I'm not going to be living in your house. You guys are. I don't wake up every morning looking at your design. You guys are. So that's the bottom line. Next one is finding the right builder. And that basically the same aspects as the right designer. You want to tell the builder what you want, and then he can quote your job according to what your desires are. And if your price comes in too high, then you start shrinking, or you find that it's cheaper, then you start expanding. And you want to find one that's willing to go for, give you references. If he's got nothing to hide, he'll give you everything you need to know. How fast he works, where he's worked, how many crew members he's got, willing to provide a detailed estimate. One of my contractors comes to me and says, hey, I don't know how these other guys are getting jobs. They go out and see the homeowner the first time. And they say, yeah, it's going to cost so much. They say, how do you calculate that? You can't. If you're building something that's going to cost you $200,000, you want to make sure you know how much money is going in your kitchen, how much you're spending on excavating, how much on your exterior finishes, your lighting allowances, things like that. And if the builder's not willing to do that, run. You know, he's going to be giving you a shady deal somewhere. But there's a lot of good builders out there that do everything here. And the next big one is personality compatibility. You're going to be working with this person or persons for the next 3 to 6 months of your life. And you want it to be a good experience. You want to have open conversations. You want to be able to feel comfortable. You don't want to dread seeing him come on the job site, or he dreading you coming on the job site. You know, there's all kinds of options that can happen like that. But so if you find a friendly guy that's willing to answer all your questions and, in fact, teach you what you don't know, chances are you found a good builder. And finally, enjoy the journey. Don't be in a hurry. Some people take 2 years, some people take 2 months. And the ones that have the biggest regrets are the ones that take 2 months. Because they rush things, they think, oh, I gotta have it now. And in some cases they might, but it's never a good thing to be in a hurry when you're building something that you want to last for the next 20 years. So no question is too small or stupid. You don't know something, you just ask. And if the designer or the builder is not willing to answer it, again, don't go for them. Because you want to know what you're getting into. It's going to be a process. You're going to find out some things you know, some you don't. And the bottom line is, every homeowner is the boss. You know, we work for you. If you want more information, I got some over at booth number 215.